Adam? Adam, are you there? Adam?
Adam?
Adam? Adam?
Looks like he's there. Think he's okay?
I don't know.
Do you have a number where we can reach him?
No, I just always called his sister, and then his sister told me that he'd call us back in 2 hours. And
I've tried that, and I've never gotten the call back.
all right, maybe I didn't do this right.
No, he's having trouble with call recorder. Shut up, that's my sister. Tell her I said hi. She's nice.
Real nice.
She seems like she could run pretty far.
She seems smart, but
You'd have to be
up for it.
really crafty with her.
You look nice today. A Journal of Emotional Hygiene.
All right, how are we doing now?
Oh, that sounds nice.
Good, mm-hmm. good,
There
good,
he
good,
is.
Good, good, good.
God, Adam, your voice is just like a station wagon driving into the garage of my heart. Just feels so. Just it's like Dad's home.
Yeah, he got groceries, and it's probably good.
There's probably a little bit of post work frustration.
No,
but
he's got pizza. I think he has pizza.
Yay!
Yay!
I think he has pizza.
Pizza, Dad.
When I bring home Panda Express, everybody is so excited.
Who likes waiting for a panda?
That's my go-to treat the family. Everybody's going to be happy when I walk in with this. My dad did donuts, or when he felt, I think, a little cheaper, Stella Dora breakfast treats. What's your, like, I'm going to come home and make everybody happy.
We got sugarless gum.
And toothbrushes.
Yeah.
Was it that bad, Adam?
Adam, were you on the elementary school playground just trading toothbrushes for everything?
No, all of the junk food that I never got, I was voraciously trying to procure from all the other kids on the playground as if they were dealers. There was a kid who used to go to the mini market after school. He would take orders every day. I think every classroom had one of these entrepreneurial. I loved Lemonheads.
Well, when I was in high school, I imagine they don't do this anymore now because of the diabetes. But when I was in high school, that was the way they funded everything, was selling candy. I mean, I had to sell it for band. I had to sell it for drama club. I was constantly selling Snickers the entire time I was in high school. And you'd get this big box full of these, and it was wrong in like 11 ways. Because first of all, I'd eat all of them and end up owing $40. But you're just walking around, everybody's just selling candy to each other. It's like, it's like social media. It's like nobody's happy and everybody's just trying to trade favors. But the beauty part is, it was cover. My friend Phil, he turned this into a small business. He told people he was collecting for the Marshall Fund. And he had lockers throughout the school, and he had people he hired, and he was able to buy a Marshall amp from selling candy at slightly below what the band kids were selling.
Oh, that's good.
Now, where's Phil now? Phil is in prison.
Trading Lemonheads for cigarettes.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I don't have to trade things. I mean, Scott, you've talked about this. I'm so bad at negotiating that, like, if I had to stay alive by trading things, I definitely couldn't feed my family donuts. There's no question.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to trade a set number of dollars that you have decided in advance is the right number of dollars for me to give you for whatever it is that you're going to give me in return.
I feel guilty counting my change.
It's a little rude, to be honest.
I feel the same way. I feel like I'm always putting people out, and I've gone to places where like I think it's even wrong, and I just don't even want to bring it up. And it happens at food courts a lot, let's be honest.
I've actually, I think, become such a spineless softy that the really serious negotiators now think that that's my strategy. This has happened to me a few times where I've gone in to buy a couple of really big ticket items and have been absolutely willing to pay the price that is set out in front of me, that's written on the sticker. And I'll be like, so it's $5,000. Okay, all right. And I'm reaching for my wallet, and the guy's like, well, 4,000 for you. You join my Facebook fan page.
Because he's from a Bob Hope movie in the 40s.
That particular experience was buying a Turkish rug, and it was that. It really was. he ended up taking $1,500 off of the price and then giving us another rug, which we didn't need. We just used that rug to...
You just throw it out?
We just... Well, no, we put that rug on top of the other rug to keep that rug clean.
Scott, I think some people are completely unprepared for that. I read an article recently about how they train car salesmen. It's so extensive and it's so aggressive. It must be incredibly disarming to have a slender man with a small torso come in and pay sticker price. They don't know where to begin. They probably think you're sandbagging. Like, over the years, something will happen and they're going to get screwed.
Right. Or they think, well, what's the angle? What's this guy's angle coming in with a pre-written check that's already written out for the amount that I have asked for up front?
And he brought pie.
And he brought pie and apologies. I'm so sorry. I hope this is enough. Should I pay more? Can I pay more? And that happened with the last car that we bought. But I've probably told you guys about my white 2005 Highlander that my friend Pete calls the rental, because who would buy a white car? But yeah, so I walked in and let's say the price was $25,000. I was absolutely willing. It seemed like it was totally worth that much money. And I left and I had kind of made an enemy of the sales guy, who was sort of shrugging and angrily walking circles around us, and had ended up paying something like $2,000 or $2,500 less.
Very nice.
I know.
I just said very nice. I really wasn't listening to the story. I don't know what you said.
Awkward cake.
Very nice.
Very nice. Very nice.
What happened, Adam?
I don't know. I zoned out.
Adam's,
say it again.
Very nice.
Very nice. Very nice. I make a few out of deal. Three rugs.
Merlin and I are the rug salesmen, the merchants, and you're the guy in the corner just kind of...
picking my teeth with a curved knife with a scimitar.
And just saying, very nice. That's very nice.
You know what it is, Scott? I think he's sandbagging. He's working us. He acted like he wasn't listening.
Oh, my God.
Because now he's going to try and give us the Scroogey, and he's going to want us to lower the price.
Of the conversation.
What is it going to take for me to put you in this scimitar tonight?
Are you a good bargainer, Merlin?
No. I think this is extremely well documented. I just want to leave. I want to be gone. I never wanted to be there. And I'm so uncomfortable around people. And especially people who have to, as part of their job, like formally pretend to be interested in me. It makes me incredible. It's why I can't go to pole dancing. You guys know this. I can't go to pole dancing.
Right. Where do you look?
I mean, it's incredibly awkward. We have some friends who really enjoy pole dancing, and I can't be around it. I can't even be there. I want to talk to them and ask them if they're getting health care.
No, I know. The hills have eyes.
Oh, boy. Big blue eyes, which makes it even worse. No. I just want to go in there. And one time I was at a party with a stripper, and it was my friend's bachelor party, and I wanted to leave. There was Christina Aguilera playing, and I was taking 20s out and trying to get to the door, and still, you know, there's the touching and the rubbing and the awkward movements, and I couldn't spend enough. And they're like, you know, you only got to give her $1. And I said, well, it's going to take me forever. I've got like $80 here. I just want to get in the Highlander and go home.
I was waiting outside.
Now, Adam, when you went in and you bought your costly leather car, how did that work? Do you still drive that? We got like four of those now. What do you have?
No, it's the same car. I think I'm going to keep it till roughly 2018 because it's a good car. It's decent. The leather is...
very nice.
Very nice.
Very nice.
I deserve that. Well, you asked me about my car. Is that something that I have to talk about? I spent like 6 hours getting coached by my dad on how to buy a car before I did that.
They gave you a toothbrush?
You know, how to sort of like exercise the vocal cords so I don't sound like such a doofus and a kid. And I guess I haggled a little bit over the APR. That's a car term.
I think that's like how much riboflavin you're supposed to have every day.
Oh, see, I thought it was the thing that you got surgery for if you're a pitcher.
Oh, no, that's that Tommy John thing, I think.
Oh, that's right. Was your dad's advice helpful?
You know, I think it was. It's just one that goes in that man handbook that I always forget every page from. Next time I buy a car, I'm going to have to go and ask my dad again. I'm just never going to retain any of that crap.
I picture him. Okay, this is how I picture your dad. He's slid under a car like he's changing the oil.
Yeah.
But then he slides out and he's got a toothbrush in his mouth. But he's definitely got a white t-shirt on and a towel. And he stands up and he's, you know, wiping the toothpaste off his hands. And you ask him these questions. I'm, of course, fascinated by this, as we all know. These are the kinds of skills that we never learned and wish we could have learned.
Yeah. It's like something from like a Dennis the Menace cartoon where somebody's like, let me show you how to fight. Like, put your hands up like this. And like, you're going out there and you're going to go fight somebody who like fights all the time. Like, you give me all the advice in the world about how to lower the register of my voice and go in there, and I still feel like three little rascals inside of a trench coat. Like, trying to look 6 feet tall, holding up a finger for a mustache. I'm going to expect a lowered price. Now, what do you think, Adam? If you were going to sell yourself, you're a businessman now. How do you go out and you sell yourself to people?
Like, I try to play the nice guy, and then I set up the relationship. You got to glad hand them a little bit. You got to grease the wheel, is what we say.
You show them a little tit, right? You just say a little bit. You get them interested, right?
Yeah. They have to believe that they can't do it without me. Like, they can't live without me. Just a little bit of sugar, and then, bam, here's my price.
Do you cuddle at all with people when you're negotiating?
No,
you seem like you could be very cuddly with a client.
No, I save that for my special clients. Oh, my head is literally on the desk right now.
Are you sleepy?
No. I'm just going to listen to you guys for a while.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's fine.
Well, a lot of times they say take it off the market. You leave it out for 90 days, you should take it down because people are going to wonder, what's wrong with that place? Why is it still in the market? Mm. Even through this, Scott, you bought a house.
That's smart. Are you talking about me, or should I take myself off the market?
I thought you were just going to listen.
Go ahead. Sorry for interrupting.
I think that's one reason we have such an ancient, broken, terrible, uncomfortable, unsafe car. The time when we bought our car was so humiliating. We did everything wrong. Even as we were walking, like, you know, walking off the lot because the car wouldn't run, we realized, like, that we had been, like, mega screwed. We didn't bother to check it. It had been, like, a leased car. It had been, like, four people had owned it before us. Like, McKennedy might have had it. I don't even know. But, you know, we knew that, like, our friend bought a nicer car at the same place and paid, like, $3,000 less. And that's really frustrating. That's the thing that gets your dander up, right? Now, next time, that's not going to happen. You know what I'm saying? I don't like driving. That's the other thing. I mean, you know, it makes it easier for me to negotiate. I don't care. I don't need a car. I'm just here for your fucking coffee.
How long do you think you could go to a Toyota dealership and just kind of sit in their sales room drinking coffee? Of course, within a few minutes, you'll get your cup of coffee. And let's say you're sitting in the lounge or you're kind of wandering around the showroom. You'll be approached. They'll ask you a few questions. They'll say, what are you looking for? Do you want a car? And you'll just kind of nod and smile and maybe not even say anything to them. Just seem affable and not threatening. Then you stick around. Maybe you pull out your laptop. Maybe you get some work done. Then you come back the next day. I mean, what are they going to do? They're not going to call the cops.
They got snack machines. If memory serves, when I was a kid, they got a TV you could watch there.
Yeah.
They definitely got bathrooms that I assume you'll have access to for some time. But you could go in there, and I guess part of the question is, Scott, how long can you string them along, but also how much do you give them to keep them from literally throwing you out?
Right, exactly.
Maybe you ask for a brochure, just one. Give me your best brochure, and then give me an hour to look at it.
They probably have free Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm. That's standard now at car dealerships.
Yeah, but I mean, let's compare it to a coffee shop where, you know, of course, this is rampant in San Francisco and Los Angeles. The coffee shop patron who comes in pays the minimum price to be able to sit down and work for hours and hours. That's probably a couple bucks every couple hours, right? A cookie and a latte. So that person's spending, you know, $6 to basically sit there all day. Why spend even that when you could just walk over to a car dealership, which is much quieter? It's probably got faster Wi-Fi.
What if you offered to buy a windshield wiper? Just one. Just like, what if you just said, hang on. Whoa, what's the hurry here? You got somebody else you need to talk to?
Right.
Right?
Yeah, go talk to them.
Okay, how much are your windshield wipers? Also, got to get the password for the Wi-Fi.
That's great.
You could do it. You got to string it out, though. You got to learn to give them the stink eye.
You can buy your entire wardrobe at your dealership as long as you don't mind wearing clothes entirely emblazoned with the car logo, which some people don't mind.
That's a real...
I could see you enjoying that, Scott. I could see you in a Prius shirt.
Oh, yeah. You put me in a Prius shirt and some Camry briefs.
And some Prius culottes.
some Prius culottes. And let's take a step back and remember that I'm accumulating this wardrobe over the course of several months. So I'm not going there just to spend lots of money every day. I'm going there. You got to sell me those culottes. And it's going to take me a while. I'm going to look at the culottes. I'm going to look at the half shorts. I'm going to look at the clam diggers. And I'm going to, you know, maybe one day is just trying them on day. Maybe one day I have to try the culottes on for 4 hours just to feel like what they feel like when they heat up and get kind of sticky.
Do they have a dressing room at the dealership?
Let me fold that for you.
Well, think of it this way. Let's say, again, let's go back to our $6 a day to sit in a crappy coffee shop. How many days is that to work up to, let's say, $20,000 for a car? You know what I'm saying? Like, let's mm-hmm. basically say you have to buy a car.
Oh, it becomes like a caffeinated installment plan.
Exactly. It's like leasing.
You're saying you drop $6 every day, you try on some culottes, you sit down for a while, you watch All My Children, and then maybe I buy a car eventually. Relax.
And then, yeah, 20 years later, you buy a car, and everybody wins.
I would love to just wait them out, because you know what? Can I just be honest with you guys? This is the training that I need. You know what I mean? It's like you're scared of a snake, so they give you some string. And then they scare you with the string, and pretty soon you're not scared of snakes anymore. I think that's what we're doing here. I'm sitting around scared to talk about money. I think I have to go grab the snake. I have to go in there and literally sit there in some Highlander skorts.
Just quick question. Does your insurance plan only cover witch doctors?
Well, it's an HMO, so it's a human medic. I got nothing. Oh, my gosh. Wait a minute. Hang on. Here's the thing. We all go in there and we rotate. We spend a little bit of time in each of the dealerships.
That's a really good idea.
We're testing them out. We're getting, you know what? Maybe we get a Dodge culotte. You could go to different ones, try it out, test the coffee. Does the clicker work on the TV? Do you know what I'm saying?
Right, right, right.
The thing is, you could wear them down. They're not used to this. And all it would take is us literally finding 6 years to do this in. We could do that. I wouldn't mind having a better car. You know, I like coffee. Cars.
Cars.
God, cars are funny.
You guys ever buy cars?
Hands in a derby.
Scott, did you just come back from England? Is that right?
Yeah, I was in London for about a week.
How was that?
Yeah.
It was great. I went to the British Museum one day. Mm-hmm. One thing you should know about British museums, you go and they give you money to go to the museum. It's great. The British Museum is amazing because, I don't know if you know this, but British people were horrible, murderous, genocidal xenophobes who conquered the world for a while and brought back a lot of stuff from the places that they conquered. Hmm. And I don't think they paid anything for it. I don't think they...
it's a building full of stuff that used to belong to nicer people.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, we're just dead people. Who are now dead, so fuck them. But I have to say, the mummies were pretty awesome.
You were just by yourself?
Yeah, it was me and the, let's say, 47,000 French and Italian girls that I fell in love with as I walked through the museum.
So did you take their pictures?
A lot of them. A lot of pictures. I made it look like I was taking a picture of the marble bust of Marcus Aurelius, but I was really... It's really taking a picture of the marble bust of Marcus Aurelius.
You know what I mean?
That means pooping.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, Scott. It's a British museum, so it's about the history. It goes way back on the empire. Is that the idea? Is it history, culture, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's a bunch of stuff.
Well, it just seems to me that that must be an interesting trip, given how deep in the shitter they've been in the last 100 years or so. I mean, the museum that you would have in England... You know, like 150 years ago would have been a hell of a museum. But, you know, they've lost a lot of real estate since then. Is that reflected in the exhibits?
Yeah, well, so every time they lose a country, they just turn the lights off in that portion of the exhibit. So you have to kind of feel your way through sense of touch, human chains, flashlights.
It's like a haunted house where you got to feel the macaroni.
That's right, that's right.
That's human brains, Governor.
Speaking of which, did you go to the London Tower? Is that the exhibition of torture?
Oh, yeah, the Tower of London, right.
Tower of London, right.
No, I didn't go. I didn't even know that existed. People keep saying something, something Lou or something, something Big Ben, and I don't know what they're talking about. I missed a lot, is what I'm saying. I only had a day, really, for tourism. And you
chose to go to a British museum for that?
I know. Kind of dumb.
I don't know if it's dumb, but, you know, I found it a little overwhelming. It's like going to Manhattan. I mean, there's an awful lot going on, and none of it concerns me, you know? And so I feel really adrift. Everywhere I go, I have self-esteem problems, don't I?
I was going to say, you don't like London because there aren't enough people there who are interested in you?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if that's anything I can change. I mean, I don't know if I could have a newsletter or...
I think just a sandwich board.
I was trying to explain monarchy to my daughter, and it was one of those classic, like, dumb kid things, because the more I explained it, the more fucked up it sounded. And when the man or the lady in the castle dies, their baby gets to win.
It's true.
When I go to England and I'm around British people, the Monty Python dork in high school comes out, and you try to say, like, Britishisms that you think that might impress them with your knowledge of Britishisms, but it doesn't.
What'd you pay for that? About 50 bob? What do you think they paid for the lorry on that lift? Tuppence? There's just not enough people like me there.
I guess when I was looking at the mummies, it reoccurred to me just how cuckoo that is. Putting all of your science and all of your technology into the service of the preservation of a certain amount of a dead person's body.
And they put a hook in to pull the brain out.
Yeah, I guess they took pretty much all the soft stuff out. Mm-hmm. So the organs and the brain.
That's a very English thing to do.
Just all the soft bits. Mm-hmm. Call that a meat pie.
It's incredibly creepy. There's so many things that you could put your resources into. And keeping the king's cat, you know, inside some gauze seems very odd. But, you know, we should respect these people. Those guys were everywhere. Because they had ships. It was the Armada, right? There was the Spanish, and then you had the English, and they owned everything. My grandfather, he's from South America, but he's English. They were just ruining everything.
I don't know. All those exhibits were in the dark. So,
I love the idea of a really, really candid British museum. Maybe it's shaped like the Earth. And then, like, at the beginning of the day, it opens up, and it starts out, you know, and there's a wall. It was a Hadrian's Wall or whatever. You got a wall. And over time, maybe by lunchtime, things are really starting to happen. You know, you're getting a lot of tea. Yep. There's a lot of very, very unhappy brown people all over the place. And then, you know, by afternoon, by tea time, if you like, things are starting to really slow down, and more of the lights are being shut off.
That's nice. That's a good idea. Well, gosh, it could almost be like a car dealership. Where, you know, it starts in the morning, and like you say, in the mid-afternoon, it's crazy. There's all kinds of business. And kind of starts to thin out, kind of gets a little quieter, cars kind of disappear.
Thins out, much like the blood of the royals, who are increasingly impotent. So really, by 6 o'clock, you can get pretty much fucking anything you want.
Yeah, so the salespeople at the British Museum car dealership are increasingly growing visibly impotent. And
maybe they're becoming a little stooped.
Yeah, a little wan.
And you just walk in there with tuppence and say, could I please speak to the exchequer? And they say, sorry, I have no idea what that means, but my bones are very brittle, so would you like to have this lorry?
So, Adam, let's say you've got a day in a big city. You've never been there before. What do? You just kind of wander around? Do you look in the tour book for something? Are you the kind of guy who has to read a map to get a lay of the land, or do you just jump out there and see what happens?
You know, I've only ever done that in Tokyo, and I think we just hopped on the train and went, and it was really fun. I don't remember Tokyo being a really navigable city.
Well, it's huge, yeah.
Yeah, you just get on and you get off. I think most of my trips are food-based. It's all centered around finding something interesting to eat. So as long as I've done that and I have a story to tell, then I'm fine.
What do you do, Scott? You seem like a wanderer, somebody you could follow his nose.
Yeah, I like to wander. I unfortunately am too shy to eat at a nice restaurant by myself or even at like a cafe where I don't know exactly how to do things. So My food trips are basically, I'll go to Tokyo and I'll just look for the Chipotle.
Oh, that's me. Every town. Like, I end up eating Starbucks and Subway everywhere I go. Doesn't matter where. I don't love it, but at least I understand it. I don't have to try and pronounce things. I think it can be very overwhelming to show up somewhere and then you got to acclimate yourself. I mean, last time I went to Manhattan, it took me 4 hours to buy Advil. Nothing. I don't know how anybody lives in that place. It just seems like a test.
I like Manhattan because it's got the shortest time between wide-eyed wonderment and grizzled, sad person.
Yeah, 4 days.
4 days, max. And it's amazing, and you're walking around, the camera's spinning around you, and everything's cool. And, you know, you get on the subway, and you talk to your neighbors, and then, you know, 2 subway rides later, you've learned how to stare at the advertisements.
And you hate the people who are new to the experience and enjoying it.
That's the hardest day as a fake New Yorker is day two. I don't know if it was when we were there, but last time I stayed in Manhattan, they had to have white noise machines in the room because they're playing Italian disco till like 5 a.m. in the middle of the place. It's one of those like fake W places. Mm-hmm. It's got a big blank thing in the middle that makes it like a big megaphone. So you know what I mean? Like you imagine a place where all the rooms are around the outside, like in High Anxiety, and then there's just a big tube of Italian disco shooting up into this big chimney of loud pain. And they actually, when they walk you into the room, you're like, here's your green apple and here's your iPod, Doc. Here's your safe. And they show you a dial on the wall where you can turn up a...
Wow. Wow.
Just wow. So you know, don't be worried. Until very, very, very early in the morning, there will be deafening and really shitty Italian disco. Almost all the time. Or you can eat that apple. Green apple.
Man. Merlin, I have a question for you. Actually, I have a question for both of you. When you guys wake up in the morning, do you go over to the medicine cabinet and eat a vitamin?
You made me spit duck.
Me too. You made me spit duck.
Are you backbiting my duck joke?
Yeah, if you bite duck poop.
It's your own duck material, asshole. Scott, the last thing in the world that I want to... Well, the fourth to the last thing that I want to put in my mouth when I first wake up is a vitamin. Because every time, for a while I was taking those, they call them food-based vitamins. We got to take like 2 of them.
Oh, okay.
And they're like the size of a baby's fist. And it's like if your finger wasn't working well enough for inducing vomiting.
Right.
Why don't you have 2 extremely large brown pills? You know what I mean? You wake up and I don't know how people do that.
Yeah. I think the only vitamin in those is that just they're shaped like the coffin you'll eventually end up in, and it's just sort of a reminder of death.
That's not a bad idea.
Stay healthy. Choke on this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Actually, that's not a bad idea. Just instead of taking stuff with vitamins, I don't know what you call them, like beta whatever, carrots.
Beta slammers?
Beta slammers.
Maybe you should take a vitamin in the shape of what you fear. Kind of, you know, like desensitizing you with the string snake. You know what? If you're afraid of cancer, maybe you should get like a lymphoma. Not a big one, but one you could swallow comfortably for a while. Then it gets bigger. You'd have to go to a doctor for this. This is not the kind of thing you're just going to go pick up. You know, it's like hair replacement. You got to do it in a graduated way.
Yeah, I like this, though. I think it is important to be reminded of what either makes you afraid or inspired every day. I mean, for me, it's like I'm inspired by and afraid of Bette Midler. So if I could swallow a very small but very accurate bust of Bette Midler every morning, that would be awesome.
Yeah, or like if you're afraid of dying alone, you could just eat a single serving meal. But like really slowly.
I like the idea of it being a very tiny, vitamin-sized, you know, hungry man. And maybe you start with something generic like a coffin
or Bette Midler.
Or Bette Midler.
Yeah. You keep it very simple, a car salesman.
Adam, are you a vitamin guy?
I started taking omega-3 fish oils because my doctor said my cholesterol is not good.
Adam, did you somehow retreat within yourself in the last minute and a half?
Just getting a little shut-eye. I like you guys a lot.
I like you guys. I love you guys so much. That's why I'm eating compulsively. Listen, funny. We could do it. Oh, God, the rice problem.
Adam, were you guys family game night people? We've been trying to institute a family game night over here, and it's a mixed results so far, but I'm just wondering if you guys were.
What good are board games in the age of video?
It's really true.
It's so true.
No, I don't mean to be profound, but if I were your kids, I would be bored to death by something that was that didn't have a touchable screen, including you.
It's yeah, maybe that's the problem.
And finally,
we were stuck in a hotel a couple months ago, and it was just, you know, it was like a skiing place, and there was no snow. There was nothing to do, you know, unless you just want to watch your kids shiver. So we went down to the game room, and we were all excited. You know, it had like a little fake putt-putt golf. You know, you can throw beanbags and shit. And they had all the board games. And we pulled out Life, where you got to go through your life with a car. Do you remember? Do you guys remember this?
Sure.
And the main thing that struck me was how shitty all the board games were. It was really like, here's your game of life. And you open it, and it's like six pieces of cardboard and a spinner.
That's true.
If you've been doing this with the family board games, you must realize this. The spinners don't really spin. They're already warped by the time you get them. It's very poor craftsmanship. I mean, I'm not saying the stuff that we had when we were kids was, you know, like military grade. But, like, I would be scared to play Stratego with my kid.
The sound of a finger awkwardly and too hard hitting a spinner, and then that spinner not spinning at all.
Oh, God. That's an ice cream cone dropping off.
That's working its way into our genes. You know, that's like becoming worthless genetic material for a generation, a million years from now.
Really, my kid just needs the spinner or the Pop-O-Matic. She's fine to just play with that for an hour. I should get that looked at.
I'm even more mystified, to be honest, and maybe this is unfair. It is unfair because, look, everybody's shitty in their own ways, but the people who are shitty specifically in the way of as adults wanting to play board games at parties, I don't have time.
It's the worst.
Yeah, I agree.
Or like Pictionary or something. It's like, 'cause you can't really opt out. You sound like an asshole. You know, but then the board game people, they're like, wow, they're so aggressive. They're like, I don't know, panhandlers or something.
Oh, come on.
Oh, you don't like Sorry? Nobody likes Sorry. There's nobody who's ever liked Sorry that wasn't a dick. Chutes and Ladders.
Sorry.
I don't get apples to apples. I don't get it. I mean, I get it.
What is that? Is that a card game?
It's like a wordplay game, really. Mm. It's all pre-made jokes and answers, like setups and punchlines. And the fun is in pairing them randomly.
That sounds like hell.
Yeah. It's a game of non sequiturs, and I guess if you're drunk enough, then it's really delightful.
Ugh.
It's like drunk Mad Libs?
Yeah. Yeah, basically, for adults.
Do you remember what the thing that probably was responsible for like 20% of Spencer Gift's revenue, the game Taboo? No, not the game Taboo. Skimples. Scruples.
Scruples, Scrabble, Boggle.
23 Skidoo.
Scruples.
Scruples.
Sure.
Scruples was the one where it'd be like, tie up your dick. Yes or no? Yes.
If you came in somebody's panty drawer, how long a note would you leave? Be honest.
Be honest. Scruples. I'm sure there were advertisements made for that game that had a guy asking a terrible question and then a lady whispering, Scruples.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there are board game people.
Yeah,
sure. You know, and they got a whole closet. Just
sure.
I think it's sweet in its way, you know, but it's like swingers. They should keep that to themselves. Like, don't bring that out while I'm there. I don't need that.
Our game, the Yuke Nicidae board game,
yeah,
should be a board game that is played to make the people who wanted to play a game regret wanting to play a game.
It takes, even in its shortest and simplified version, it takes 90 minutes to read the rules. It's like jury instructions. If anybody gets it wrong, you got to start over. Okay. Section 1. The board shall be placed upon a table that has been cleaned. You already said that. The board shall be placed upon a table that has been cleaned. That's what it feels like sometimes.
Oh, God.
We should do that. We could make an excruciating game. You know, we could teach those fucking game people a lesson. They're going to keep that goddamn closet closed when I'm over.
That's right.
It's weird. It's like crossword people. You know, there's a certain kind of person that just likes those games.
Keeps me busy. Keeps my mind active.
Hey, it keeps me from self-harm.
Keeps me from coming in an underwear drawer. That guy.
Scruples. Okay. So was that really a game? Scruples. God, I think I'm having a stroke. Scruples, taboo, these all sound like games.
Yeah, scruples. No, that was.
The game of moral dilemmas. Oh, you have no idea.
But I think there were also other naughty games that you could play that were even naughtier than... That just seems like a word that you have to say in a British accent.
Right.
Than scruples.
You know, I do like the idea, though, of some kind of a You Look Nice Today-based body game. But, like, body in a very confusing way.
Have you tried nipple poppers?
Nipple poppers. It's not what it sounds like. Or is it?
I think maybe the game is just called The Rules.
Not those.
No, I like nipple poppers.
You like nipple poppers?
What's the worst game mechanism that there is? And can we put that one in our board
That's
game?
That's a good question. Well, I feel
oh,
like,
wait a minute. The spinner is a good start, though, Scott. I think you're on the right track.
Spinner and a cup. You have a large cup, like a large leather-bound cup that's got the spinner inside. You have to shake it.
But there's like 126 pieces, and if you don't have a full set, then you can't play the game.
That's right.
What about this? The spinner is part of a large perforated cardboard sheet that definitely has not all of the pieces that we say it has. Now, here's the thing. You think you're okay. You try to punch it out. There's no way to punch it out without ripping some essential pieces.
Right.
You take it out the spinner. The spinner, the aperture of the cardboard dingus is not nearly the right size to put the spinner through. You don't even learn which directions you weren't even supposed to read until later on because that piece of the cardboard's already ripped.
Yeah, that sounds like a perfect way to start.
Could we have a VHS component of it, too?
Oh, yeah. Those were some beautiful, beautiful games that had a VHS tape.
Yeah.
Were they like mysteries where there's somewhere where it's like, now fast forward for 16 seconds?
Pass the wizard hat to the nearest Jew.
We didn't say Elijah says.
This has been You Look Nice Today, featuring Lonely Sandwich, Scott Simpson, and Hot Dogs Ladies. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, it might have just been the Amish influence that we grew up near.
They love games.
They love games, and they love poorly disguised vibrators.
Black lights. God, nothing's worse than giving somebody a shitty vibrator.
What does an Amish lady lean up against?
Oh, no, 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 no. She doesn't even have a dryer. She doesn't even have a dryer.
What does she lean up against for her ersatz orgasm?
You go for a ride on the covered wagon.
Is that right? And then
I bet you there's a lathe that you could operate real slow like.
Yeah.
Get a nice little kind of velvety little shaker attachment for it.
I wonder if it's a lathe that all of the Amish folks sort of nod in a wink when you're at the Amish goods supply store to pick up your, you know, your oblong lathe.
Because it's shaped like a cock and it's got balls on it. And veins. Right. It's a veiny, throbbing electric.
Well, madam, perhaps thy neck pain would be help with thine purchase of a lathe.
Oh, I like the idea of it just being a photorealistic cock.
And you just write lathe on it. Just a big pounding hydraulic black cock. But it's shaker, right? You just make it very simple. You can hang it on the wall so you can still sweep up. Constance, thy cock is large and godly.